Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We've got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about seedlings. We're going to talk a little bit about this hurricane and what it means. Hey, I want to follow up on a couple of things. Greg, let me talk about bamboo. For tent caterpillars, which a lot of people are seeing a lot of tent caterpillars this time of year, I recommend cutting some bamboo because bamboo is very lightweight. Strip off the lower branches. They just get in the way. Leave at the top, there's often a little knot of branches. Leave some of those on just so that they serve as little catches. They don't have to be very wide, maybe just about 4 or 5 inches, you know, around that top, just so you can use them to sort of like a little tentacle that when you stick it up into that web and you twist it, it grabs the web. You see what I'm saying? Twist it and pull it out of the tree. It comes out in pieces and it's pretty good. That's how to do it. Greg, I also want to add, because I want to be absolutely accurate, and we talked about Greg having a chinkapin. We've been talking about that for a while. I looked at the leaves, and that's what I saw, and then I had a description of the nut. But I think, Greg, what you have in your hand is an acorn, which doesn't come from a chinkapin. Comes from an oak. And so it may be that the tree you have, and we're going to have to clarify this at some point and figure it out, is not a chinkapin, which is too bad, but is in fact a Japanese oak. What do they call those things? The Japanese sawtooth oak, which have been widely planted now. And sometimes I forget to think about the fact that people are planting these, which are, I don't know why they do it, but they've been widely planted. They have not much value. I don't think you want to try to eat those acorns. You can try to dress them up a little bit, but they're not going to be edible. So, Greg, we gotta talk about that just a little bit. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about sea level rise. And, Tara, hold on just a second, because I want to talk a little bit about the sea level rise issue that we talked about earlier. And I was thinking about this. I was looking at New Bern in North Carolina, and you may have seen the pictures of New Bern, and you may have seen the pictures of these downtown districts in many of these cities that were flooded. And you think, gosh, why would they do that? Because they've got 2 or 3 feet of water just pouring down the street now. And why would they do that? Why would they build? But, you know, when these cities were built, cities like New Bern, when they were originally established, and the same was true for Mobile, if you think about this, Mobile's established in the 18th century. This is where we built the city. We got a map. City was built here in the 1720s, 1730s. When it was built, sea level was probably 1.5 to 2 feet lower than it is now. It was that much lower. And that meant that, you know, when we look at things like Water Street, which seem very close to the water now, the water was actually probably much, much farther away from the city than it is now. And we forget about this. And the cities, the Delta and other things can respond to that sea level rise by actually trapping sediment and rising a little bit. And that's kind of, it seems to be what the Delta's done. Delta's held its own. But you know what? Mobile doesn't change. If anything, Mobile has sunken just a little bit in relation to the sea level. And the sea level keeps rising. And we're not trapping more sediment downtown. We're not. We're staying the same, but sea level keeps rising. It's something we have to think about very hard. And when you build your house, you've got to think about what is sea level going to be like in 20 years and 30 years. It's a very important thing, and that's one of the reasons why we're seeing so many houses flooded out in Houston and in all these other cities, is because people aren't taking into account not only are they not taking into account the hurricanes, they're not taking into account that sea level is rising. And so we have to be very careful. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It's well documented. Give me a call if you have doubts about that or worries about that. But it's quite clear that that's what's happening. Tara, I'm listening. What's up? Thank you for holding. You there? Tara? Sorry. So it's just a little too long for Tara. We've a couple of other questions here. I'm gonna look at them. Dan is sending me pictures of plants in a container that are, yes, Dan, I would say that flimsy stem, the flimsy stems that you're seeing are signs of atoliation, of that sort of stretching that occurs. I want to give them as much sun as possible. Some of your seedlings look really good. They're really good there. One of the things you can do is they'll do okay. I sometimes put a little bit extra soil in those pots. May help sometimes just to sort of bolster that seedling as it's coming up. But they're doing okay. It's just atoliation, just stretching. Seeds do that. They need the sunlight. Hey, folks, let me remind you what the best sunlight is. When you're putting your seeds outside, the midday sun is not good light for those seedlings. In fact, it's got so much radiation and it's so hot that those seedlings probably can't even process that midday light at between 12 and 1, between 11 and, let's say, 11 and 1:30 or 2. Make sure that they get plenty of light in the morning and plenty of light in the late afternoon. That's the important part. And if you notice the sun declines, just kind of watch the sun. You'll see the sun declines in the horizon. And it's that low light that is really useful for those seedlings. It's very good. Not the midday light. Hey, Michael, I'm listening. What's up?
Yeah, you there?
Yeah.
Hey, I've got a 5-year-old Satsuma tree.
Yes, sir.
And it has two branches coming out of the base, and the northern branch, it splits. The bark splits up the branch, and then the bark below it falls off. And it's already killed the Satsumas that are on that side of the tree.
Okay, say it to me one more time, because I'm listening and I'm trying to visualize this. Say it one more time.
Okay, it's a Satsuma.
Yep.
5 years old.
Yep.
It has splits that go up the north branch of the Satsuma tree.
Okay.
And below the splits, it looks like maybe it was frost damage. Or
right.
Damage.
Okay. Yeah. Good, good, good.
And then the bark below it, below the splits, just falls off.
Yeah. And you know, I had that damage happen to, a lot of things can cause that. And I've had that damage occur to some trees. Sometimes even sunburn can cause that kind of damage, but probably it was temperature related, and it probably was it could have been a cold wind compounded by sun damage. Is it just one branch that's occurring to?
It looks like it may be going over to the other branch, but it's still healthy. I mean, this branch. The funny thing about this branch is that
one.
One side of the branch died, and the other side of the branch is still looks fine, but the bark's still falling off.
Yeah, so it's it may recover. Don't do too much to it yet. As long as it's not stressing the tree or pulling away from the tree too much, I would just let the tree try to sort it out and heal that up. And some of it may be healed. It may heal some of that damage, but I wouldn't cut it off. I would not cut it off. Mm-hmm. You can certainly cut off the brown branches. Don't cut them back too far. Just cut off, you know, what drives you crazy. Or you can just wait. You can wait and not cut it off. It really won't make any difference to the tree. It's just a matter of what drives you crazy. I wouldn't meddle with it. Let this tree sort it out just a little bit. And let the tree try to figure this out. There's not anything you can do when you have bark splitting. There's not a thing you can do. The tree has to be able to heal that. I have seen citrus heal bark splitting and some loss of bark that results from cold damage and that kind of stress. In fact, I have a blood orange that has managed that quite well over time. And sometimes it might not do it, but, you know, there's not much you can do except don't put too much pressure on that limb, which it's already dying back, so it's not going to stress right. The tree any. I think you just have to kind of watch and wait.
I have another question yeah. about it. Could it be borers, some insect that's boring into it? I don't see any activity of them.
No.
But could it?
I don't know of any. There's not really any borers that affect citrus here. So, no, I don't think so. It could be, I mean, if I were seeing little peck holes, I would say woodpecker or sapsuckers. I've never seen them on citrus, but it's possible. But, you'd see the peck holes. It sounds to me like the kind of damage I've seen when a tree is stressed by cold and oftentimes in combination with sun, which reheats the bark. But it's a split bark issue, and oftentimes the tree can heal around that problem as long as there's plenty of good bark elsewhere on that tree.
Okay, just let it be.
Yep, let it be. There's not a thing you can do. And the tree'll sort it out, and call me back and let me know how things look next year, okay? And
sure.
Let's just see.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great crop last year. I mean, there were plenty. I cut it back like you said.
Yep.
And it was great. This year, half my satsuma was gone. You know, they turned orange and dropped off.
Yeah, from stress, but that's okay. So the rest of the tree is going to do fine, and it'll take off. And just make sure you don't have any problems with the rootstock taking over. But I think everything is as good as you can make it right now.
Okay.
All right, okay. Michael.
Okay, all right. Thank you. I'll let you know.
Keep me posted. Hey, Tara, are you back? We'll be back.
We all know someone who believes their plants are more than, well, just plants. They feed, water them, they talk to them, even name them.
Perk up, Fred. Fred, wake up.
People who love their plants just seem to get a certain something from helping them grow. Non-plant people don't really understand, but Cecil Christenberry and all the folks at Old Time Feed in Fairhope understand your plants and your lawn and have the expertise you need to keep your plants thriving. Old Time Feed has been in the nursery, feed, and seed business since man landed on the moon. So buy the highest quality plants and get the best advice to make sure you start off with healthy specimens that will brighten up your home and your yard that will thrive in our coastal climate from Old Time Feed. For homeowners, contractors, and yeah, even supplies for home chicken coops, Old Time Feed in Fairhope at Highway 98 and Greeno Road.
If you're a small business owner, well, you don't need me to tell you that the right hire can have a huge impact on your business. That's why it's crucial you make sure your job post reaches the most qualified candidates. Could try posting on some of those other job boards, but if you do that, do you really know who's going to see your job posting? When you post your job on LinkedIn, it reaches 70% of the U.S. workforce, and unlike job boards, LinkedIn is a community that career-focused people visit every single day to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. LinkedIn Jobs intelligently targets candidates based on their skills, recommendations, even how open they are to new opportunities like yours, insights that are only available on the LinkedIn network. The result is that your post is matched to the best people for the job. It's probably why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. And right now you can go to linkedin.com/WAVH to get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/WAVH for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, you're closer than you think.
If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please call this toll-free number right now. 800-410-4036. That's 800-410-4036. Calling your addiction team, you're taking the first steps to recovery. Don't fight addiction alone. Their advisors are ready to take your call. Your future is still a bright place. The help you need could be one call away. 800-410-4036. That's 800-410-4036. This call is completely confidential, and if you have private insurance, there could be little to no cost to you. Even if you've already been to treatment, give us a call. There is no need to let addiction ruin your life. Take the first step now. Call your addiction team at 800-410-4036. That's 800-410-4036. Make the free call now. 800-410-4036. Your addiction team is a third-party advertiser for various treatment centers and placement networks. Individual results will vary. Visit youraddictionteam.com/terms for more information.
Hey, it's Sean Sullivan. Join Mike Ward and me every Saturday morning at 7 for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, bringing you inshore, offshore, and freshwater fishing reports from some of the area's best guides, plus hunting talk, conservation news, habitat management, and the latest in state and federal regulations. So join the conversation Saturday mornings at 7. Plus, you can listen after the hunt or fishing trip with our podcast on FMTalk1065.com. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, outdoors for South Alabama by people that hunt and fish right here in South Alabama.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, sir, David. I am excited to see those pictures of Melaton. They're coming on just like they're supposed to be. Rusty, let me talk to you about figs real quickly. Figs, when we eat figs, this is going to sound strange. We're not actually eating fruit. That's crazy, isn't it? We're actually eating the flower. So one of the interesting things about figs is when I tell you with things like citrus and other things, you need to pull off the fruit the first year because it stresses the tree, et cetera. It really doesn't matter with figs. It just doesn't matter. Figs grow too fast here anyway. So, no, I don't recommend pulling the figs off except you're going to eat them. If you're going to eat them, pull them off. Figs are different than other things, in part because what we're actually doing is we're eating an unfertilized flower that looks like a fruit to us, but you're actually eating a flower. I hope that doesn't make you feel less manly because you're eating a flower rather than a fruit. But that's the truth. You're eating a flower when you eat a fig, and no, it doesn't matter. Rusty, the other thing is the brown turkey figs this time of year rarely develop into edible fruit. The LSU varieties sometimes produce a second crop. I'm not sure whether LSU Gold does, but I think LSU Purple does. It often produces late. So it's going to depend on variety. The second crop on brown turkey rarely matures, and the same is true. So this second crop, you'll look at it and you'll wait and you'll wait and you'll wait, and nothing happens. You're not doing anything wrong. It's just life, okay? The LSU varieties were developed in part and selected in part because they produced a crop later and often produced two crops a year, sometimes produced two crops a year late in summer. It depends on the LSU Gold and the LSU Purple, but don't worry about pulling them off to make the tree healthier. Really, with figs, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. On citrus, quite another thing, I often recommend pulling the fruits off. It's a very important thing to do. Tara, I am so sorry. Thank you for trying again.
But don't be sorry. There's something screwy with my phone. I had the it was showing the wrong signals, and I'm still not entirely on top of it, so I'm going to try to be fast, if that's okay. Right. The thing that occurred to me while you were talking about the very important observation of the sea rise level, near and dear to my heart and my pocketbook, I should say. There's an incredible book by Al Roker, that's him, the weatherman, that called The Storm of the Century, that really opened my eyes. I've been through two floods, but it is nothing like what happened to Galveston around the turn of the century. And even if you just look at the pictures, It's pretty remarkable. Now, my question about that topic is, does Dr. Bill Williams have a book, and what's the title if he does? Because I'd like to buy it.
Does Dr. Bill have a book, Charlie?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, now, this is bad, because he may, and ooh.
Well, y'all talk to him about it. Get him on it.
Okay.
I'll buy it.
All right.
And I called about ideas that have helped me with shading seedlings.
Yeah,
called about.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you saving the star for last, three ideas. First of all, wire baskets, any kind, hanging garden baskets, plastic seed tray things will fit over a whole seed tray, inverted. You invert those,
right.
And then you can either put screening fiberglass on it, or if there's going to be a heavy
That's
rain
a
prediction,
thought,
you're not
you know.
Going to be able to be there. Heavy foil or plastic or cardboard, anything to cover it up. To keep the rain from pounding low ceilings to death.
You know, that's a
right?
great idea. And let me, can I add one thing about the screen? Because I hadn't thought about the screening, because in the past, screening was sometimes cut out too much sunlight. But they make new types of screening. I can't remember. They got trade names. Where the holes are larger relative to the screen part.
Well, you can poke holes in it, you know,
yeah,
to make them,
yeah,
you know,
well,
larger holes intermittently.
Yeah, but the good thing is that screen is close enough together to exclude insects, but the pieces of screen are very thin, so they let in lots of extra light. And, you know, that would be a perfect – I haven't really thought about that, and it's not that expensive. And that
no,
would be a perfect
not,
cover for
– I mean, you have to take a screen down anyway, which
yeah.
we do frequently in the season.
Yeah.
It's free.
That's right. And I took some down the other day, and I could have used that. And what a great idea. I hadn't thought about using the screen. But some of these new varieties of screen, because they're very open, that's a great idea.
Okay, but that's only the first idea.
Yes, okay, sorry.
Let me give you the others. Fan covers is the second idea. Fan covers that are discarded. And again, the topping of the, whether it's the shade cloth would work, you know. Put it on with clothespins or office clips. The office clip magnet things are great to use on wire is, you know.
Right.
Of course, now there are the plastic seed tray things, like I said, if they're at that stage, to make it easy to carry in and out. That's only the second one, okay? The third one is the star of the show. Discarded bird cages. These make fantastic carriers because they're easy to just pick up and carry in, carry back out. You know, they have a removable tray on the bottom for whatever overwatering. But if there is overwatering, then it gives them the extra humidity. You can put, you know, little things inside them because they're usually, or they come with little extra areas that you can maneuver to put other seedlings, two or three layers. You see what am I explaining it right? And you can, best of all, you can even make them kind of cute. Once the seedlings get to be big enough, you can tie some ribbon on it or put a little plastic birdie on it or whatever and carry it around, and people go, oh, that's kind of cute.
Well, that's the bird cage is interesting. The gaps between the gaps between the openings on a bird cage seem to be too big, but
not if you cover them with a cover. You cover them with some screen.
Yeah, that's right. Cover them with a screen. There you go. So that's cool. That would be a lot of fun. So
I just thought I'd throw them out there, man. Recycle. Have fun. Be imaginative. You kids,
all right.
Like you.
All right. Well, I like
Take
that.
Care.
And so these things can work now. This is very good. Tara, oh, we lost Tara.
No, she's finished.
Okay, good. So a couple of quick things. Pictures people are sending in. Dovegrass. We talked about it last week. Murantia. It's getting to be a little bigger problem. We'll come back and talk about that a little more. You know, I'm sorry I had to mention LSU, Greg. I'm going to talk a little bit about your oak when we come back. But this is such good music, we have to listen to it.
My old hand is a good old hand. She lays eggs for the railroad man. Sometimes one, sometimes ten. That's enough for the railroad man.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. Got lots of issues to address here. Greg, that is a definitely a Japanese oak, the one we call Quercus acutissima. Acutissima is the species name. Quercus is the name for oaks. It is it's the one they call sawtooth oak that they're planting for deer. Now, I will tell you, that's one of the craziest things I ever heard of in my life. In a state that has more species of oaks than any, just about anywhere else in the world, certainly more arborescent oaks than just about anywhere else in the world, incredible, incredible oak diversity that produce acorns all year long and that are precocious. They do everything right. We go to Japan to get one sorry little oak to plant for deer. It shows how much people understand about where they are. I'm sorry, Greg. I don't mean to disparage that tree. But
there could have been an article in Field and Stream or something.
Yeah, well, at any rate. So that is the Japanese oak. It is. I wish, Greg, that had been a chinkapin. There is a difference between there are several oaks that have leaves that look like chinkapins, and that's one of the confusing things. There some of them are native and some are not. This one, the sawtooth oak from Japan, has leaves that look like chinkapins. There's also what we call our chinkapin oak that's native in the U.S. You don't have that growing in your yard. It's quite common on limestone areas in Monroe County and in North Alabama on limestone. You'll see it there, but I'm certain that's not what it is. I can tell by the bark that it is a Japanese oak. And it would be the wrong place anyway. And, of course, swamp chestnut oak has leaves that are somewhat similar because they have the little scalloped edges somewhat similar to chinkapin. But, at any rate, we can talk a little bit more about that. I had a call from somebody. I'm trying to keep up with all these things, who asked me about their a citrus that they had in their backyard that's 8 to 10 feet tall, bushy. Please let me know if it has thorns on it. I can help you. And look at the leaves and tell me if the leaves are in clusters of three. I can help you a lot if you can tell me that. If the leaves look like they're in clusters of three and if it has thorns on it, we can address that one pretty quick. So, Dan, I'm gonna try to read through these. Meanwhile, Brad, I'm listening. What's up?
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
Good, doing great. I texted you a picture of a wildflower that I found in 8 Mile in Piney Woods. I just wondered if you got that picture and talk to me about it.
Is it let me see. I did get a stray picture here of a flower that's not quite a wildflower. Let's see.
Is it purple?
It's kind of a reddish.
My name is on the text, if that'll help you.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. So for some reason, it didn't get here. So yeah. So try it again.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it just did not send. There's a picture, but I think that's from Johnny and Grand Bay of something else. But this is definitely purple. And
yeah. You know, I looked. Do we have wild orchids in Alabama?
We do have wild orchids in Alabama. We have lots of them.
Okay, this was. I'll send you the picture, but just quickly, it's a little. It was a little. The flower was probably not much bigger than a quarter. Purplish. But anyway, I thought it was interesting, but I'll resend it.
So resend the picture. You know, it reminds me. I think maybe what you're looking at. Maybe skullcap, Scutellaria, and it's a member of the mint family. Does it look like a little? It's got a little hood on the top. With a little mouth.
It grew very close to the ground, barely above the ground. Maybe because it just emerged. I don't know. And it has a little center horn-looking thing coming across it.
Well, purple orchids. Let me say this. purple orchids would be very unusual and very rare here. There are purple orchids. We have most of our orchids that will be blooming this time of year are orange or white, and they're very showy. But a purple one would be very unusual. So yeah, I'm really interested to see this. It's a challenge for me to figure it out from here. Send me another picture. Give me another shot. Let me try it. Okay.
Okay, I'll do that. And real quick, I just want to, real quickly,
yeah,
my understanding of the sawtooth oak.
Yeah.
And what I've heard people call sawtooth oak around here is like a swamp chestnut, but it doesn't grow in the swamp. It grows more in the hills. And that was always my understanding of, you know, the local name we had for it.
Yeah, well, the sawtooth oak, yeah, so that's right. So where we are in Mobile County, really, the only place we would see, if it is a sawtooth oak, it's planted from acorns that were produced in the past 50 years, and they're all Japanese oaks. And it's a Japanese oak that was planted out because somebody told somebody that this is going to make more deer, which it doesn't do. But, you know,
I've been in the woods, so I don't know where we're going. Maybe our stories are not crossing, making up.
Yeah, there's only one tree that we're going to see. Now, if you move farther north, if you get on the limestone, you'll see other oaks that have that kind of sawtooth pattern. But the only one we'll see on the uplands here in Mobile County would be the Japanese oak that's been planted out. And sometimes the things grow fast here, so it looks like they've been planted out for a while. And people have been planting them. But
I'll send you that picture and maybe comment on it before the show's over.
Yeah, yeah, and send me a picture of those sawtooth oaks, too. Be interesting to find out.
Okay.
All right. Hey, question about what do I think about passion fruit? I love passion fruit. There's some great passion fruit varieties out there. I'm interested in hearing about the one that you're growing. Keep me posted to see. Passion fruit is absolutely delicious. One of the really fun things we forget about, passion flower. It grows wild here, some of them. you know, you can't make everybody happy. So Greg David, I won't say which David, sends me this message. Even if Greg didn't like hearing about LSU figs, I did. So there it is. There are LSU fans out there who seem to have woken up this morning in a good mood. So we got some other things. We've got another caller. David, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning, Bill. I have a question about some rose bushes. When I was, you know, a little kid, Father had all this stuff in the yard, and a bunch of them were rose bushes, and I know we used to trim them, cut them a certain way so they would do what they're supposed to do. So how did you trim a rose bush so it grows like it should and makes flowers like it should?
Well, here's the trick. There are lots of different kinds of roses and lots of different kinds. And they're each one, not each one, but they're depending on which group they fall in, you prune them a different way. In the old days, the roses that we brought in the 19th century that were very popular in Mobile, you really didn't want to prune them much at all. They were shrubs, and there you'll still find some of those roses in cemeteries. Magnolia Cemetery used to have a lot of them, though I'm afraid we've kind of weed-eated them all out of the cemetery. But some of these old roses don't need pruning at all. They really don't respond well to pruning, and so you don't want to prune them at all. The roses that came in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s that were very popular, and to some degree the 70s, we called them hybrid tea roses, the ones that people bought from catalogs up north and other things. It was very popular, and people had them in beds. Those roses, they didn't have to be pruned really hard every year, but if you were going to get the kind of long-stemmed roses that were good for putting in vases on tables and other things, you had to prune them really hard. And so those roses were pruned to the ground every year. The roses that became popular after that, grandifloras and other things in the 70s and 80s, they didn't like a lot of pruning either. They were more like shrub roses. And then the rose that has come in now, I'm not making this easy for you, am I, David?
No.
The roses that people are selling now. Oh, my goodness. You know, I forget the names of things that I don't appreciate well enough. What do they call that thing? The fiddle-dee-dee, the rose that everybody's selling and that everybody always asks me about. Those roses, really, I would say, my view on those roses is the modern roses that they sell at Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's. If you're going to grow those roses, if you have to ask how to prune them, then you don't want them. Because really, they're just designed not to be messed with.
Knockouts,
thank you. I knew it was some name like that. The knockout roses, sorry about my name thing. Sometimes I block out names. Knockout roses really don't, you know, there are little stories about how to prune a knockout rose, but the fact of the matter is it's not worth pruning them a lot. And so you don't want to prune them heavily for sure. And there's not really a good way to prune them. So do you know where your rose came from?
Well, let's see if I can help you out just a tad here. Probably won't help you much. We bought this house. This gentleman had this house. You know, original owner in that 20-some years, had all this stuff in his yard. So these roses, I don't know how long a rose bush lasts, but he probably had them for a long time, my guess would be. And when we bought the house just a year ago, these rose bushes was, you know, just a few feet high, you know, waist high, something like that. Some of them getting kind of tall now, and I remember my father used to cut them, you know, about 5-6 years old. I don't remember much about it. But his wasn't real tall either.
Right.
But he'd go out there, if I remember right, he'd cut them out with scissors or something.
Right.
And, you know, certain ways.
Well, use some
always look good.
Use pruning shears. But, you know, those are different kinds of roses. So I doubt that the roses you have are those kinds of roses because they don't last a long time without a lot of supervision. But if any of them are flowering, if any of them have flowers, if you'll take a picture of that flower with your phone and send it to me, I might be able to help you identify what kind of rose it is, and we can go from there.
Okay.
Are any of them have flowers?
I think some of them do.
Yeah. All right.
One or two that's, I'm going to say the darn thing, kind of like green stalk. It kind of shot up 5 or 6 foot.
Right. And so with those roses, you may have not the right rose, but you may have a rootstock. We've got to take a break here. We're going to be right back. If David, hold on just a second. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Hold on.
Okay.
And we'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David, listen, there's a couple of things that go on with some of the old-fashioned roses. You still there, David?
Yeah. Yes.
So when, if you're not careful, the hybrid tees are welded onto a rootstock, and the rootstock doesn't have very pretty flowers. It's not desirable. It's kind of nasty. But it has a good root system. And what they do is they weld these hybrid tees onto that rootstock. Sometimes the rootstock takes over. And so if you see a sprout coming from the ground, it could be that the roots, and it's growing very fast, that could be rootstock. So there are two things you need to do. You need to take a picture of this rose, and you need to take a picture at ground level where this strong green sprout is emerging. And let me look at it. Keep it in focus, and let me look at it, and I can tell you whether it's the rootstock or the rose, that the desirable rose. If it's just the rootstock, we got a problem. You don't want that rootstock. You don't want that rootstock growing. You just want the top part. So send me that picture, and then send me pictures of any flowers, and I may be able to help you there. I think you're going to run out of time this week, but all you got to do is go and take a picture with your phone and then text it to this number that you're calling now next week, okay? And let's talk about it again.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Look forward to talking about it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Philip, I'm listening. What's going on?
Hey, good morning. I've got some large zooplankton around my house, and I mean, they're like 7-8 feet tall. And I was trying to prune them recently, and apparently got at least one wasp nest in one or two of them. So I had to abandon it. They told me I better stop, so I did. I listened to them.
The wasp told you better stop is what, yeah. Right. Right. They're very persuasive, aren't they, the wasp?
They look pretty weird. I got like six of them, and the two in the middle look like they're just got abandoned. And my question is, do they hibernate or something go away at some point where I can finish pruning them?
Sure. And so they won't overwinter at all. This is the kind of year they're kind of busy. They're kind of winding, but they got a lot of business left to do. So, but if you can just hold off on those zooplankton until October, November, or better yet, wait until after they bloom next year and then prune them. Depending on how you want to prune them, I would just wait until spring. Why don't we wait until spring? Wait until after they bloom next spring and then prune them.
Well, they look pretty, they're really long branches on them, and I wasn't trimming them back harshly or anything.
Just getting those long branches. Well, if you can
like
find
4 feet longer than the rest of it.
Yeah, so.
Because it's so spindly.
So at this point, there are three choices. One, get a bee suit. Get a bee suit. You know what I'm talking about?
My neighbor's a beekeeper.
Yeah. So get a bee suit. Or two, get a 10-foot-long pruning pole. Maybe 20 feet long would be better, depending on how aggressive they are. Or three, figure out how to reach in there and pay somebody to go in and pull those wasp nests out for you.
You can't see them.
Yeah.
It's so thick.
Yeah, I know. So I
was hoping for a better answer than that.
It's like, what is the secret to a happy life? I don't know. I mean, I can't provide all the answers. I mean, wasp or wasp, and you can either get to them or not. I don't think there's a quick way, I certainly don't have much persuasive power when it comes to wasps. Wasps are very persuasive with people, but people aren't very persuasive with wasps.
I want to find out if they flew north for the winter or something.
Yeah, well, they do, actually. They do. And so as soon as it gets cold or starts getting cool nights in late October, early November, you're going to see those wasp nests pretty well decline and go away. And by the first frost, they'll be gone completely. I'm just telling you to wait until spring because it's a better time to prune than during the dead of winter. But you can certainly once that wasp nest declines, last of November, 1st of December, you can take those big sprouts out if you want to.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. I'm going to do that, and I'll make sure at least wear long sleeves and some kind of a mask.
Yeah, that's right. They'll sting through clothes. I've had it happen. So just be careful with it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Bill.
All right, Philip. Sorry, I can't fix wasp. I wish I could. Or maybe not. Maybe waspers, wasp are what they are. Hey, Dan, if I got time, you going to let me talk to Dan here, Charlie? Yeah, Dan, I'm listening. What's up? Dan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
I was just calling to clarify about the pictures I sent in. I had two questions. I know we're short on time, so real quick, the main thing is I don't know if you got the picture of the Satsuma fruit that I sent in.
I did, you know. So let me talk to you about that. It looks to me like it's the kind of it looks to me like it could be a couple of things. I think if your fruit are dropping, it's not because of that yellow spotting. The yellow spotting could be a little bit of bird peck, or it could be the citrus mite. But I don't think it's the fruit are dropping, maybe because the tree is young or because it's stressed or because the trees always drop a few fruit. But I don't think they're dropping because of that skin damage.
And well, I could say the only ones that are dropping are the ones that have those holes in them, and they're turned a little bit yellow, and then they're falling off. And that picture, those holes are spread out like, you know, kind of like a shotgun pattern. But on some of the other ones, they're real tight. They got a real tight spacing, almost like just a bullet hole. But you can still see there's multiple small holes, you know, in that bigger brown spot.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what I'm going to guess is, and my best guess is, this is bird peck. It's birds. Sometimes birds learn to bathe. They sort of like the oils on the citrus. And I think there's some speculation that some birds learn to do this. Have you noticed a lot of birds moving in and out of the tree?
I couldn't say. It's my girlfriend's mom's tree, and she just she sent me the picture to send to you. So
yeah, so I'm pretty sure that that is the result of bird peck. And I will. I usually don't see the fruit dropping as a result of bird peck, but they can make a mess of the skin, and it's just like they're kind of pulling the oils out of those fruits. They may bathe in the oils of those fruits. I suspect that's what it is. It doesn't look like the other types of things we'd expect to see, like stink bugs. I think it's too much for stink bugs. It could be stink bugs, but I don't think so. I think it's bird peck.
Next time I go out there, I'll inspect them a little more thoroughly, maybe cut one open, see if there's anything on the inside.
Yeah.
I'll see if there's stink bugs on them as well, just to kind of make sure.
All right. Keep me posted on that. You know, we are running out of time. Guys, it was fun. Man, that was fast. We'll be back next week.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking where the silver queen grows.